Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. It's been a long time since I had the opportunity to do a program with Dave, and it might be another day because we're having problems connecting with him, but I'm sure it'll be okay here in just a little bit. But you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and for the day, it is Tuesday, November 29th, 2022. So we're going to just jump then right into the precious metals market. It was kind of we're going to have these days until after the holidays. You know, I had a conversation with someone today, and they were talking about, you know, one minute, you know, gold was going up and it had a little bit of a pullback and so forth. And, but, you know, things go up and things go down, and you're going to have light trading days and heavy trading days. And so we're all going to be around. And I do believe I do hear Dave in the background.
Hello.
Hi, you're a little overmodulated, so since we weren't able to do any type of testing prior to the program, so we might have to work through that. But
sounds good.
All right, there you are. So we have gold today. I was just getting ready to go into the market prices today. We have gold up $7.40 at $1,750. Silver up 30 cents at $21.32. Platinum was up $11 at $1,011. Palladium was down $11 at $1,904. You have the USDX today is trading. That's actually higher. So it's interesting to see gold higher also. The USDX is 0.17 at 106.82. Crude oil was up $1.24 at 78.48. 78.48. And I hear a lot of squeaking in the background, Dave.
Hey, that's Macy, our new mascot.
Uh-huh. Well, you're going to have to train her to be no barking during the programs.
That's right.
Let's see. Let's go ahead and get to the stock market prices here. The Dow, it was negative most of the day, so it was up a few points, 33,852. The S&P remained negative 6 points, so really nothing's going on in the paper markets either, 3,957. The NASDAQ was down 65 at 10,983. European markets, DAX was lower slightly. Same thing with the, I don't know, with all these big games, you know, the games that are going on, Lord knows what they try to do to these markets to keep anything from happening. I can't imagine that. Maybe this afternoon all eyes are on the U.S. and Iran, but the U.S. 10-year yield is 3.75%. That's up a little bit. Oil, natural gas was up 1%, 7.27 for natural gas. And that's pretty much it that I can see in the, things are just a little unsteady. Some things that we're going to be talking about here. But really it was kind of a no news kind of a day, I believe. I guess the game is over now, that big one that everybody was watching. I guess the U.S. won, Dave, is that correct?
Well, as of a few minutes ago, we were up 1-0. They had extended 9 extra minutes, so they're in that extended time. Now, so the game is still ongoing, I believe, but the U.S. up 1-0 in a very.
Why would they extend the game for? I mean, when a game's over, it's over, isn't it? Unless it's a tie.
No, the referees have the option of adding on time at the end of each half, for stoppages during the half, mainly for injuries. So if an injury takes 9 minutes to clear the field, all other things being equal, they'll add 9 minutes at the end of regulation. So they get a full 45-minute half in.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, well, something I did not know. So, okay. So, all right, well, so then that could take it into overtime or anything else and so forth and whatnot, right? Can they do that with each quarter?
Or just they're two halves. They can do halves. They'll do it on.
See what I know.
Hypothetically, no overtime or shootouts. I'm pretty sure that just in the World Cup is just in the elimination games. Mm. Later on in the tournament.
Well, so, I'll be darned.
Win or come home for the U.S. today.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started. It's been a while. Hi, Dave. It's been a while since we've had the chance to do the program together. Hope your holiday was Thanksgiving holiday was grand.
It was good. It was good. Full of food and general sickness throughout the family. So it's sort of a setback. To our weekend, but let's just say it's good to be alive.
Yes, it is. But you know what? That's traveling through everywhere. I mean, I think everybody I talk to is sick. Seems like it. I think it has a lot to do with us for 2 years not going anywhere, and you know, to some degree, that was not good for our immune systems. Even though we tried to ramp them up and everything, it's you're just not used to that immune system. Didn't get to work much for 2 years. So, but anyway, that's just my little bit of logic and common sense that I think about. And my common sense, as I mentioned, and we've talked about it here before in this program, Dave, about single family homes, pricing has got to tank with these higher rates. And so we did see single family home prices slow further in September. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index dropped 0.8% month over month in September. And monthly house prices fell in July for the first time since late 2018. So we saw, but we certainly saw, we've seen the housing market get hit because of the Federal Reserve with interest rates, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. We saw the 30-year fixed mortgage rate breach 7% back in October. That was the first time since 2002. It's still above 6. I think last week it was running around 6.6%. And so, I mean, that's more than double than what it was in the same period just last year. That's a big, big factor when it comes to people purchasing homes. I'll share this example I saw given on a program. And I don't recall the exact numbers. I've given this example a couple of times before because I think I was just literally shocked, Dave. The comparison was like a $800,000 home from a year ago that people could afford. Today's terms with these higher rates, they can only afford a $400,000 home. I mean, that's an incredible drop in the type of house that you can purchase just due to the rates. So you get less of a house and the banks get more money, more money, more money. So it really is incredible. It's shocking. And of course these higher rates will help bring the price of homes a little bit lower, Dave.
Well, I guess we will see. The previously owned homes logged their ninth straight monthly decline last month, and single-family home building and permits for future construction dropped to the lowest levels since the heart of the pandemic in May of 2020. Some housing economists are saying this tight supply will likely keep a floor under house prices. Again, we will see as the next months unfold, especially after the holidays, when people are back into house hunting again. Now, a separate report from the Federal Housing Finance Agency out today showed that home prices edged up 0.1% on a monthly basis in September after declining 0.7 in August. For the 12 months through September, prices climbed 11% after advancing 12% year over year in August. Again, showing that the prices are starting to decelerate. And, this isn't like it is some months, limited to one or two areas of the country. This is widespread. Saying 1/3 of all states and metropolitan areas registering annual growth now below 10%.
You know what, you know, earlier you had said that the report said that the tight supply will keep a floor under house prices. Well, if there's no demand, how is that tight supply going to hold? You know, so how would that tight supply, you know, I can't remember who said that. I know you didn't say it. You were reporting on what someone had said. So again, it's how does that work, Dave? So it won't. So those house prices will, you know, I don't know if they're going to fall out of bed tomorrow, but I mean, they'll certainly see, as long as these rates either stay around. I don't know. We started seeing softness in the market when the mortgage rates, what, breached about 5%?
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll start seeing people, and with all the other inflation that's eating up their disposable incomes and so forth, it just makes it even harder, even if those mortgage rates do drop to below 5% here in the future.
Well, the problem is consumer sentiment is going down, and if or when a recession hits officially, that's going to have a big impact on people's, on homeowners' psyches in particular. So that's if they think things are bad right now, just wait until that hammers home.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the consumer confidence, and we can go back to the other. And you're right, it did fall for the second straight month in November. And again, we're looking at the inflation, rising rates, and layoffs in the tech sector. The Conference Board today reported that its consumer confidence index fell to 100.2, down from 102.2 back in October. So this is the lowest since July, and it likely reflected an uptick in gas prices maybe earlier this month. This is what the senior director of economic indicators at the Conference Board said, Lynn Franco. We did see gas prices reverse, $3.52 a gallon. You know, but one thing that people aren't really talking about, we're all focused on this $3.52, but, you know, the real damage to these prices was diesel. You know, I mean, that's still way up there, way over most places, over five, closer to six. I don't know where it's at in some of the hot spots in the bigger cities and so forth, or the states like California and so forth. But having those high diesel, that hits people in a different way. You know, we focus on these gasoline prices. $3.52 is still hefty, but it, you know, a month ago it was $3.76. So it does make people take a little bit more gloomier view about the future and the economy. We continue to see the cost of food, rent, clothing, and these other essentials, they're surging. You know, inflation is nearing, it's worse in four decades, increasing 7.7% in October from just a year earlier. So I don't know, Dave. Even higher incomes, you know, they're still spending. They're still paying the higher prices. And we reported on here how some of those higher incomes are still, you know, paycheck, living on paycheck to paycheck. So it's hitting everybody's pocketbook.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just looking here at this one AAA's website for diesel. Current average nationwide, $6 a gallon.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, so...
it's hefty for, you know, for the, you know, for the economy, for transports, for, you know, farmers, for, I mean, for everything. Oh,
yeah. In May, it was 6.33. So it has come down 33 cents from then, but $6
that's
a gallon.
Peanuts. Yeah, that's peanuts.
Particularly in a big gas tank, that's a lot of disposable income.
Yeah. So again, those prices will just be moving into all the products, you know, your food, to name one. So that's a biggie. That's a biggie.
Yeah, it sure is.
So consumers are beginning to pay attention.
Yeah, the board's expectations index, you know, which measures consumers' outlook for income, business, and labor conditions over the next 6 months, declined. Some would say slightly to 75.4 from about 78. Still, it's trending in the wrong direction. But yet Americans opened their wallets on Black Friday and over the weekend, and today it looks like another record day for Cyber Monday. We'll talk more about that later in the program. Up 6% almost from a year ago, their online spending. So as we like to say on this program, this economy is not wanting for mixed signals.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday, Dave, where I saw a report where even though the percentages might be higher, it's still lower than what the past several months' trends have been. So it's definitely off from what they've been having. And, you know, we also seen these reports on these Black Friday. It used to be Black Friday. It was Black Friday. And you included Thanksgiving Day. And then you included Black Friday week. And then Black Friday started in July. And so, you know, you have, you know, so it's just becoming another sales tool, you know, to get the consumer out there buying. And it's true. I don't understand it, Dave. I mean, people don't have to look for special days anymore to get a deal because there's deals everywhere. And we're heading into a break. That's here. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter to get Dave's newsletter and the blog that comes out on Fridays. Premiums are beginning to come down. I saw 1 ounce American Gold Eagles. Their premiums have dropped 3%.
Wow.
Incredible. This is wholesale premiums. My premiums always stay the same. So when the premiums over spot go up, it's wholesale premiums. I mean, I do adjust it periodically, but they've been the same for a long time. And but 3%, can you believe that on Gold Eagles? So can't figure out what happened there, but I think there was a little nervous Nellies out there in the wholesale world thinking that there wouldn't be any Gold Eagles to sell until the new ones came out in January. Maybe supplies were getting tight, and but through the holidays it seemed to have slowed down a little bit, so perhaps there's just a little bit more there now to sell in premium. 3% is a big drop in just a couple of weeks. Plus a little competition amongst wholesalers I've seen might have spurred some of those drops. But it's just like in everything else, Dave, from cars to bread to perfume to you name it, it's always the wholesalers that they're the ones who really rake in the dough. It's not the people who, you know, it's not the farmers who pull the wheat from the fields to sell it to make bread. It's the wholesaler who sells it to the grocery store. And,
yep.
You know, so it's the same way in the gold market. It's not the miners. It's the wholesalers out there, or the, in this case, maybe the U.S. Mint. It's the only probably department in the whole government that actually makes a profit. But anyway, so 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And premiums on Silver Eagles, they're still a little hefty, but they're live. There's no delays in the Silver Eagles. Maple Leafs, Silver Maple Leafs, you're looking about a week out. Some of your other foreign is 3 weeks out. 1 ounce rounds, you're looking at 2 weeks out. So it's not so bad. You should all have it before the holidays. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Plus, you can also put your orders in now for your 2023's product. So you'll be one of the first ones to get delivered in January. Now, remember, the Mint does not release the 2023's until January. So then by the time it filters down, it could be about the second or third week in January before you get it. We've been able to lock them in a little bit sooner than today. It's just I don't make the announcement and I don't push the 2023's too early, because I don't believe you should have your money tied up for 2 months or 3 months. You know, 1 month is long enough. So when I get to a time where I feel it's comfortable for customers to place an order and wait for the product, that's what I do. So it's okay now. You have my permission to lock in 2023s for the American Gold Eagles and Silver Eagles for now. So give us a call again, 800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we're finishing up the consumer confidence, how that was falling. They're getting a little more of a gloomy look into the future. Heading into the holidays, few people are gloomy. except those who might lose their jobs or get laid off right before the holidays. It's certainly gloomy for them. I think we'll touch on just a couple of these articles briefly, Dave. You had the Fed officials, of course, you know, they're looking for the Fed funds rate to go to 5% plus. We told you that a long time ago. But the unemployment, Dave, I mean, that's where you're going to have some impact. And I don't know when you're actually going to see a bigger impact on unemployment with the rising rates.
Well, there's some that are, I mean, in the context of the Fed raising interest rates until they get inflation under control, and assuming that a big part of that is, you know, rising unemployment, there are a lot of people out there beginning to fear that that just ain't going to happen, because turns out that a lot of employers learned a lesson during the pandemic, and they're not letting go of employees like I believe the Fed assumed they would. Now, maybe we'll see a change in that come January, but aside from some of the big tech firms, industries are hoarding. I mean, we often associate hoarding with inventory. Well, we could take it a step further. It looks like they're hoarding their inventory of employees because they don't want to be caught when things do get better with their pants down again and not being able to find people willing to come back. Or only willing to come back for even higher pay and, you know, perhaps starting another round of inflation. So it's an interesting phenomenon that we're seeing now. And I just don't know where it leaves this Fed, which is hell-bent on raising rates until, you know, they get it closer to 2% inflation, that is. And you know, there's some who support, some economists anyway, who support what the Fed's doing in principle, but think that they're not going to get much lower than 5% in the next couple of months. So who knows where we're headed. Some are still claiming that there's a soft landing ahead for our economy. I don't see how that's possible the longer this Fed keeps raising rates, and we see what it's going to do with what it's already done or doing to a major industry in the country like housing. And how much worse can it get? Well, it can get a lot worse. Remember, bubbles do burst. So that's what I'm seeing, Melody.
Yeah, and they do burst. We just never know when they're going to do it. And, you know, I don't believe there will be a railroad strike. I believe we've seen, we've seen some of these talks that have stalled. Four rail unions are back at the table after rejecting their deals with the railroads, trying to get the agreements done before December 9th. Eight other rail unions already ratified their deals that included the 24% raises and $5,000 in bonuses. And, you know, Dave, I just don't believe that a strike is going to happen. I believe they'll settle this out and so forth. And
I don't either. I think the threat of congressional intervention could scare both sides into a deal.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's, I mean, that, you know, and again, they use these things for, you know, various reasons and so forth. And and there's not going to be, if there was a strike, it's going to be for an hour, 2 hours. It's not going to be anything major. And I don't think, you know, the possibility of, you know, Congress isn't even going to get involved in this. I mean, I don't think this is, you know, the airlines that Reagan had to deal with, or the, what was that union?
The air traffic controllers.
Yeah, I don't think this is quite the same, but
well, there are a lot more of these guys than there are now. I believe air traffic controllers. I don't know if that was true before that strike, which resulted in a lot of people losing their jobs and careers.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I tend to agree with you about what's not going to happen. I just don't know what's going to be the catalyst that turns around these four unions, who are already being offered 24% pay raises, $5,000 bonuses. Now, that's over several years, but still, that's a lot to turn your nose up when you're on a railroad or salary.
Yeah, so anyway, we'll wait and see what happens. And like I said, even if it does happen, it's not going to be a long one, So I don't think it would have any basic impact. I think there's other things that are brewing in the background that will have far more severe consequences on our economy than that. But you wanted to talk. We're going to change the topic here for just a minute. I saw this on the news the other day about the Merriam-Webster, their word of the year, Dave.
Huh. How about
And I like words.
Well, our loyal listeners know we've talked about this the last couple of years. Most of us know Merriam-Webster is the keeper of words and their meanings. Dictionaries are a thesaurus. Dictionaries are ever-changing. People around the world use long-standing words in new ways or even make up new ones. And that's the topic of today's levity is golden. And again, yes, we do like words on this program. We talk a lot on financial survival. It's the nature of the beast. And so words are important to us for a lot of reasons. Merriam-Webster, turns out, has an annual Word of the Year program. And their 2022 Word of the Year is, drumroll please, yes, gaslighting. Now, that's one word, gaslight. Announced their favorite new word yesterday, saying there was a 1,740% increase in lookups on their website for that term throughout the year. Now, here it is. As defined by Merriam-Webster, gaslighting is, quote, psychological manipulation of a person, usually over an extended period of time, that causes the victim to question their validity of their own thoughts, perception of reality, or memories, and typically leads to confusion, loss of confidence, and self-esteem, and a dependency on the perpetrator. That's interesting. I mean, gaslighting is often used to describe the dynamics of emotionally abusive relationships. People also use it to refer to manipulative deception in other contexts, such as by politicians and the media. It's a word that's risen so quickly in the English language, according to Peter Sokolowski, who's Merriam's editor at large. And especially in the last 4 years, that it actually came as a surprise to him and to many of us. But it was a word apparently looked up so frequently every single day of the year. Now, the term comes from a 1938 British play, Gaslight, by the British novelist and playwright Patrick Hamilton. The play was adapted into two separate films, both called Gaslight in the 1940s. It's a story, yes, about a deceitful marriage where the husband tries to convince his wife she's going insane in order to steal from her. Periodically, the gas-fueled lights in their home mysteriously grew dim, but the man insists to his wife that the lights are unchanged, that she must be only imagining things. And from there on, things started in the context of psychology in the 1960s. The term was later used by mental health practitioners to clinically describe a form of prolonged coercive control in relationships. And there you go. In the 1990s, the term gained popularity, if not notoriety, in politics. in other broader contexts. Now, another word news this year, oligarch, apparently was considered somewhat, I don't know if that was actually second place, a 621% increase, particularly after Putin's invasion of Ukraine, and with the several rounds of sanctions placed on these Russian oligarchs.
Well, you know that movie Gaslight, 1944.
Yeah,
it is one of my favorite movies. I love it. It had Ingrid Bergman in it, and it was Angela Lansbury. It was her film debut.
How about that?
Yeah, I love I loved Angela Lansbury. I mean, she was great, and this was her film debut. So I loved the movie, and I love those old movies. And
there you have it. Well. That's this week's Levity is Golden, not anything to do with gold and silver, but a fascinating aside in the midst of all the uncertainty out there.
Yes, so now we all know when we're going to be gaslit.
Yes.
Gaslit.
Don't be gaslit by other major
gaslighters,
gold and silver. Yes, retailers.
But we see that everywhere. But you know what? It is really true. I mean, when you look at, you know, I mean, politics, right, Dave? You know,
big one.
Look how often these politicians gaslight us. But it's an acceptable practice anymore, though. I would expect to some degree, Dave. Wouldn't you say it's acceptable?
Well, it's. Yes, it is. It has grown far too acceptable, particularly by those who decry its use. Beware of them, for they're the ones who are probably the biggest offenders.
You're right about that, right? All righty, let's go ahead and let's see, where do we want to go from here today? I'm not quite sure. Let's see. We were talking about diesel prices. We pretty much talked about a lot of everything. You know, we talk about inflation and baby boomers get blamed for everything. It's all our fault. Let's just say it's all our fault. So it's even our fault about inflation. So it's saying that retiring baby boomers are fighting inflation. We're making it harder for them to fight inflation. Well, when you really look at the inflation, we're on break.
We are approaching.
Oh, we'll be right back. I didn't see that.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, we're at 1-800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter hit the streets late last night. It features Doug Nolan's Credit Bubble Bulletin blog on his market thoughts and also an article for me on rising interest rates. Now, new research shows that as interest rates around the globe continue to rise, central banks outside the U.S. are curbing demand in their countries more quickly than the Federal Reserve is in the U.S. And Courtney Brown and Neil Irwin of Axios say the reason for that is how Americans finance our homes. They report that American homeowners, as a rule, take out mortgages with interest rates fixed over long periods, primarily 25 to 30 years. So when the Fed tightens, as it's doing now, most homeowners, existing homeowners, are unaffected. Certainly those looking to move up or to buy their first-time home are hammered, but in any event, not so in other parts of the world, like countries throughout most of Europe, Australia, and Canada, where spiking mortgage rates are often resulting in higher, substantially higher in some cases, monthly payments. Why? Well, because the adjustable rate mortgage, popular overseas, from a central bank's point of view, multiple rate increases, like overseas, can cool demand in a very direct way. They point to Reserve Bank of Australia analysis showing that a 2.5 percentage point rate hike caused the typical Australian family with average income and mortgage debt levels to lose 13% of their monthly disposable income. Now, that may be good for bringing inflation down, but means a lot of economic pain for those homeowners. A recent OECD report warned that low-income families in countries where households are highly indebted and where variable rate mortgages are widely used, such as some Nordic countries, could be particularly vulnerable as rates rise. In nations where the vast majority of mortgages have variable or floating rates, the required tightening and reduction in demand is spread broadly. That's according to Krishna Guha, vice chair at Evercore ISI, who adds that rates might not have to go up as much because the increase hits incomes broadly. Well, as Brown and Irwin explain, when mortgage rates reset, homeowners tend to alter spending patterns in response. A Dallas Fed paper confirmed this behavior earlier this year. It focused on Canada's housing market, where the vast majority of mortgage rates reset every 2 to 5 years, where they happen to be considered fixed rate. The paper's eye-opening conclusions could have important implications for other countries where shorter-length fixed mortgages are common. Interestingly, when a reset resulted in a higher rate and steeper monthly payments, consumers didn't appear to pull back spending on big-ticket durable goods items. But there are suggestions they cut back elsewhere, including a corresponding decline in credit card balances. Now, the paper's authors, co-authors, opined from the accounting point of view, it means that they must have either reduced their other spending or their savings. Well, the Bank of Canada reported, as of the end of last month, that roughly half of all variable rate mortgage holders in Canada, that's 13% of all mortgages there, have reset at a level resulting in higher payments. The bank warns that these borrowers may need to adjust spending or use savings to meet their higher debt obligations. So those who bought last year when variable rates were at an ultra-low 1.5% are facing the worst shock as rates approached 5% last month. Monthly payments for those buyers would have increased by almost 20%. On the one hand, Brown and Irwin believe that officials in those countries could see the effect of tighter money ripple through the economy sooner as existing borrowers curb spending and thus slowing demand as a result of higher mortgage payments. On the other hand, they say it means the burden of such tightening overwhelmingly falls on homeowners. The result, they caution, could be widespread resentment manifested through political backlash. Philip Lowe, who we quote every now and then, he's Australia's top central banker, delivered an unusual apology yesterday to regretful and angry homeowners there who leaned on that central bank's early guidance that rates wouldn't rise until 2024. Well, economists have started to warn about this mortgage dominance, the idea that central bankers could ease up on aggressive interest rate hikes out of fear of the impact on homeowners. As the Financial Times pointed out, Norway's central bank has downshifted rate hikes there after a bigger than expected impact on its housing market. Pardon me. The problem may be worse, though, right now in the UK, where rates recently soared, literally, amid broader market fallout from the failed tax cuts proposed by then Prime Minister, short-termer Liz Truss. Krishna Guha fears a huge share of the tightening that the central bank executes will run through a massive income shock to 4 million or so households on top of the already existing cost of living crisis. Oh, my apologies. She estimates the total number of mortgage holders on variable rate or a two-year fixed rate mortgage is 4 million. She calls it a huge distributional issue the central bank can't solve because it just doesn't have the tools to do so. In the short run, the best that U.S. homeowners can probably expect is that the Fed downshifts rate hikes from 75 basis points over the past four meetings to 50 basis points at its December and perhaps January meetings. After that, well, all bets are off, especially if you're a disciple of Fed speak and what we hear members talking about right now. We may get a few hints about the Fed's near-term policy direction when Chair Jerome Powell speaks again tomorrow afternoon. Stay tuned. There's a lot at stake. This interesting. You may have missed the news yesterday that the Supreme Court said in a letter to Congress that there is nothing to suggest that Justice Samuel Alito violated ethics standards after a 2014 decision he wrote was leaked in advance of its announcement. The letter was in response to an inquiry from lawmakers following a New York Times report earlier this month that said a former anti-abortion leader was told in advance the outcome of the Burwell versus Hobby Lobby Stores case involving healthcare coverage of contraception. In a 5-4 decision, Alito wrote that some companies with religious objections can avoid the contraceptives requirement in the Obama healthcare legislation. Earlier this year, you may recall Alito's draft opinion in the court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade was leaked. But while that leak was a public disclosure of the text, the new report alleged that in the 2014 case, the disclosure wasn't nearly as broad. In the Times story, Reverend Rob Schenck said he was told the outcome of the 2014 decision by Gail Wright who's donor to an organization he headed, who had dined with Alito and his wife back then. In the story, Wright denied obtaining or sharing any information, and Alito also emphatically denied disclosing the case's outcome in a statement. All right. We're talking a lot about housing right now, obviously, because of various impacts of rising interest rates. And it turns out that a vibrant tenants' rights movement has revived a push for rent control, fueled by anger and desperation after years of rent hikes that have outpaced wages and inflation. This month, voters in Florida, Maine, and California, in fact, approved ballot measures to impose or tighten caps on rent hikes. This expansion is happening despite years of research that shows rent control can actually reduce the overall amount of affordable housing and may not help those who need it most. But its supporters say solutions for the housing crisis may take years to play out, and people at risk of eviction or even homelessness need help now. And to that end, tenants from around the country have converged on Washington, D.C. this week to lobby Biden domestic and economic policy officials. In addition to strengthening tenant protections, the group has suggested a presidential executive order to set rent caps on federally backed mortgages and subsidized housing. Tara Rugevier of People's Action argues that federal action is needed because many states largely ban cities from enacting rent control. She also cites the growing share of housing brought by institutional investors. She says they own properties in Kentucky and Missouri and Illinois and California, and therefore they need to be regulated by federal law. Jim Lapides with the National Multifamily Housing Council tracked 19 state legislatures that had rent control proposals this year, nearly all of them to expand it. Well, combined with local measures, he says it's the most he's seen in working on the issue for over a decade. Lapides understands the appeal of what seems like a quick, easy fix, but says this is not it. It's a shame, he says, because rent control attempts to address the symptoms of the problem while actually making the core issue worse. That core issue is a shortage of millions of homes and apartments. It began, you know, when construction plummeted after the 2008 housing bubble burst, and it's led to historically low vacancy rates that help drive up rents almost everywhere. Lapides says capping rents doesn't add to the housing stock, discourages developers from building in that market, and over the longer term can actually lead to fewer affordable units. He said either they go into disrepair and fall to obsolescence because they don't have the resources to reinvest into those units, or they get converted to other uses. Maybe they're converted to condos, or maybe they're converted to office or some other non-residential use. Now, on the other side of the country, voters in Pasadena, California, also passed rent control, along with measures to make it harder to evict people. Tenant activist there, Jane Patagaden, says the state already caps rent, but not enough to keep it from rising higher than the rate of inflation. Now, Pasadena will limit hikes to 75% of the consumer price index. The aim is that over time, a smaller share of people's income will have to go toward housing. And that, Panagate says, will hopefully create a lot more stability. Because right now, tenants are moving every 2 or 3 years as the rent goes up. But research shows rent control does keep people from being displaced. To actually create more affordable places to live, housing experts say cities will need to do something that's not as politically popular. Eliminate single-family zoning laws. Many designed decades ago to prevent black residents primarily from buying in certain neighborhoods and allow instead for denser housing. Then build lots of it. It's a controversial method, but one that is working where it's been put to practice. A number of cities and states have taken steps to make this happen, although it's apparently too early to assess the overall impact. Now, housing experts say far more public funding in general is needed to create housing for the lowest income renters. This month, despite struggling under the sting of inflation, voters around the country approved raising taxes to build, preserve, and subsidize more affordable housing. Analysts say the meteoric rise in rents has slowed for the moment, but fixing the historic housing shortage, especially affordable housing, remains a long-term solution. Whether it's within or without of reach, time will tell. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.